The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You're listening to the Sisters in Loss podcast, a faith-based podcast that spotlights Black women who replace silence with storytelling around pregnancy and infant loss and infertility. Black women experience miscarriage and stillbirth 4 to 5 times more likely than white women, according to the NIH and CDC. Whether you've experienced a miscarriage, infant loss, stillbirth, are trying to conceive, or have an infertility diagnosis, you will learn about resources and strategies to heal, gain clarity, peace, hope, and find an empowering path forward after loss. I'm your host, Erica M. McAfee, and you will hear me interview sisters in loss who have healed from such a painful and traumatic experience by sharing their testimonies and stories to inspire and help others turn their pain into their purpose. Now let's get started.
So thank you so much, Anisha, for being on the podcast.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited. Thank you.
Yes, I would love for you to share with the listeners a little bit about yourself and what you do.
Okay, well, I am from Saginaw, Michigan. I will be celebrating 12 years of marriage with my high school sweetheart next week on the 14th, so I'm excited about that. Together, we do have a 5-year-old rainbow baby. I am also the president and founder of the Keys of Hope Foundation, and our mission is to break the silence and promote the awareness of pregnancy loss and infertility in our region. And I started that after my experience of recurrent pregnancy loss. I've experienced 3 miscarriages and 2 life-threatening ectopic pregnancies. And a lot of that came after also getting a secondary infertility diagnosis. A little bit of my backstory there.
Yeah. So take us back on that journey, your journey to motherhood, and share with us your loss story.
Well, we lost our first baby in 2014, in February of 2014. I actually felt like something was wrong and something was different. And so I called the doctors and they admonished me to go into the ER. And I did that. I think at that time we were a little over like 9 weeks. So I went in. One of the hard things or memories about that situation was I knew something was wrong, and the amount of blood that I was losing and the coloring of it was an indication for me. But unfortunately, the medical professional just kept saying, oh, no, everything's fine. You're good. Your baby's fine. It's nothing to worry about. And it was just like a team of people who just kept coming in, but they all just kept telling me that everything was fine. And I just didn't understand that, being that I saw something different and I just felt something different. You know, as a woman and as a mom, you just feel something different and you just know something's wrong. And so I stayed in the hospital all day, only for them to come back a couple hours later in the evening and say that, unfortunately, I was having a miscarriage, and they confirmed that. And it was just like my world had just dropped. I've never felt so devastated. And I think the other portion to that was the fact that they just kept telling me that everything was okay throughout that whole time that I was there, only to come back and tell me something different. And so I really took that hard. But the next day I went to church, and it was so crazy because me and God, we have this thing. And so just part of our relationship. And I went to the altar for prayer. And I went to Bible study that night, and I went for prayer. And actually, let me back up. When I first went in to church, it was a young lady there with a brand new baby, and everyone was over there talking to them. And I just was like, oh my, like, this is like the worst thing ever, you know, to be around someone else with a baby right now. But a couple hours, or well, about an hour into the service, again, I went up for prayer. The Holy Spirit just told me to go over to the baby and to kiss the baby. and to just greet her. And I was just like, God, what? You're asking me to do what? Like, that is so unfair. Like, why do I need to do that? However, I was obedient and I went and I spoke to the mom and congratulated her on her baby. The baby was a couple months old by then, but I asked her if I could hold the baby and I just smelled the baby, kissed her on her little head and everything. And I was just like, okay, God, I did it, you know. But that was just still hard for me because that was my first pregnancy that I lost, only to find out later that I was pregnant. And I was halfway through the first trimester. My levels were good. My nephew actually is the one who told me that I was pregnant. He actually laid on my stomach and was playing and talking and laughing at my stomach. And I just couldn't understand it. But he did that before with the first pregnancy. So I knew something was up this time too. So I told my husband, went in to the doctors, took a test and everything. And sure enough, everything was positive. And I was doing very well. The levels were very high. And immediately after that, that's when the hormones kicked in and I was really sick for a while. But through that time, I was still grieving. It was a little hard to understand how I could still be grieving the first baby that I lost, knowing that I was pregnant with another baby. And then I began to ask God, like, if you can kind of just tell me, was it a boy? Was it a girl? I just kept asking these questions to him. And instead of him answering me, he actually gave me a dream of a little girl in a pink snowsuit laying on my bed. And this baby kept outgrowing her clothing and I kept changing her clothes. Along with my nephews, we kept just changing our clothes because she kept growing and growing. And I kept asking in a dream, like, whose baby is this? And everyone was like, oh, that's your baby. And I was like, oh, okay. So when, again, we found out we were pregnant, I was excited about that. And then I had that dream. And right before we found out that when we were due, I just knew it was a girl because I felt like that was God having me to look forward to the future. And sure enough, the doctor confirmed that we were due December 22nd. And so even before finding out she was a girl, I just held on to that because you think about pink snowsuit, December, I'm due. So I just put it all together. I was like, okay, God, thank you for that promise. Thank you for that word to hold on to. So we went on to have a healthy, beautiful girl December 23rd, came home Christmas Day with her. So she's our Christmas rainbow baby. That was like the best time for me. I was just really excited, really happy. I really fell in love with pregnancy process and enjoyed my pregnancy with her. And because of losing our first baby, we decided that we wanted to just take our time and enjoy her, enjoy breastfeeding, just, you know, everything that I could enjoy about being a mother at that time, not knowing that after 2 years of enjoying her, when we finally decided to get started again having a family, we're going to have some challenges. And so fast forward to 2017. Well, we got pregnant in 2016, but in January of 2017, I had another miscarriage. So this is my second miscarriage, but also at the same time, my aunt on my father's side passes away, his only surviving family member from his immediate family, his only sibling. I had to tuck my feelings and tuck what I was going through to show up for him and really to be there to support him at this time. And that was a little hard to do, but I just did it. You know, I tucked my feelings. I did share with my mom and, of course, my husband knew and maybe a few other family members, but not that many people. And the reason why I really didn't talk about it as much is because also I didn't know anybody else who experienced pregnancy loss, who had a miscarriage or anything besides my grandmother. But the crazy thing about that situation is right before I had my second miscarriage, my grandmother who raised me, who helped raise me, who meant the world to me, laid out a solid foundation for my life. She passed away. So I didn't have her support. I didn't have her here. And I didn't know too much about her situation until after that as well. She also experienced a couple pregnancy losses too. And so I didn't have any peer support. So it was kind of hard to actually navigate through those feelings and really work through that, not knowing if what I was feeling and experiencing was normal or not, or how I should feel, how each day should be, if I should be further along by now, you know, because this loss was a little different than the first one. So, of course, you know, you really can't compare them, even though they're pregnancy losses. So I tucked it and I threw myself into work. And just work, and anything that I could to just distract myself from really having to deal with what happened. And so some time goes on. We become pregnant again in the summer of 2017. And so we're excited. I actually planned this like cool scavenger hunt for my husband and my daughter around the house to let them know that I was pregnant. I mean, I really put a lot of thought into it. I have a video of it, and it was just so cool. And we were really excited. But I started not too long after finding out that I was pregnant, I started spotting. And so I was talking to the doctors, and they were just saying, well, you know, you had a C-section with your daughter, so it could just be some blood that has been trapped up in there. Don't worry about it. As long as it's not, you know, that bright red color, you should be fine. But I mean, when you have experienced loss twice already during a pregnancy, you're a little bit more on pins and needles than I sure was. I was on pins and needles, and I was anxious and nervous. So I just pray. Yada my word, quoted scriptures, learned the word. I fed myself the word day and night, scriptures and praying and worshiping. And I remember just one time just really being very nervous about everything. I went to praise and worship rehearsal, and I had to lead worship that night unexpectedly. And so we began to sing a song, and I just decided that I let that song just really permeate in my spirit. And so I gave the baby a nickname. And I said, if you are a boy, your nickname is Judah. I'm going to name you Judah to remind me to praise God when it looks like, you know, I'm overwhelmed or when I'm anxious. And if I see the blood again, just something to kind of get me through. And so I did that for a couple months. But then on November 1st, 2017, the color was no longer brown. It was actually bright red. And I just really felt something was different, even in my body. And I told my husband in that morning, it was like 3 or 4 in the morning. And I just looked at him. He looked at me, and we just both started crying because we just couldn't fathom actually being back here again. It's like, no, God, like I did everything the church, you know, teaches you to do, to stand on the word, to pray, praise God, and to just really have that faith. And I did that, but I can't be losing. This can't happen again. I can't be going through this again. I'm fighting a good fight. And so sure enough, we got up hours later, went into the doctors, and he did confirm that it was actually an ectopic pregnancy. Not really knowing too much about an ectopic, he actually ended up, you know, telling us a little bit more about that at the time, but also letting me know that it was very life-threatening, especially with how far along I was at the time and the growth of the baby, and that the baby actually could not live inside my tubes. So my only option was at the time was to receive methotrexate, which is another form of like chemotherapy. It's a drug that they administer through a shot. And so we left there and went to a different hospital. And that really opened my eyes to the inequalities that Black women experience, because the lady came into the room to administer the shot, and there I am, still fully clothed, fully dressed. She barely wanted to explain to me exactly what she was going to do, but I just persisted and asked questions because I just want to know, and I know how to, you know, speak up for myself and ask those questions, advocate for myself. And so my husband and I asked her, you know, as many questions as we could, but she still kind of just gave me just the basic information that is just a drug, and this is just what you use for an ectopic, whatever. And so she's like dressed as if she's going into nuclear war, like suited up from head to toe. And so I'm looking at her like, well, wait a minute, I still have on all of my clothing, like, do you have a gown? Do you have anything that you can give me? And she's like, oh, no, you don't need any of that. You know, you'll be fine. And so my husband has to hold me up so she can administer the shot. And she begins to administer the shot. And all of a sudden, just all the amniotic fluid and everything and blood just started to flow down. And so I felt it, and I just said, okay, wait a minute. This is a little weird to me. Should I be like urinating on myself? I feel like some fluid rushing down my legs. And she was like, you should be fine. I don't know what that is. Or no, just, you know, just remain calm. Everything's fine. And so she continues on with the first shot, and she has to give me another shot. And so again, now it's just flowing like a faucet, just leaky faucet, just flowing. And so I'm soaked. I still have on my pants. Luckily, they were dark jeans, socks, tennis shoes, everything. And I'm just standing there looking like, well, okay, well, if you're suited and booted and ready to go, then why didn't you give me a gown or, you know, a Depends diaper or something? Like, nothing. Like, she gave me nothing. And that was devastating for me because I just really just didn't understand how now, on top of knowing that this is my third loss, that this was also life-threatening to me. But then the medicine that you gave me was like a form of chemotherapy. And now I have to go home wet, soaked and wet. And I'm just like, okay, well, would you have done this to like a white woman? You know, if it was her, like, would you have given her a gown? You have made sure you took extra precautions with her. Would you have thoroughly explained the process with her? It just really opened my eyes to see that there was something there that wasn't right. And I really felt that tension in my spirit. And so I went home, did the best I could as far as trying to get through the loss. But then that's when I learned that, you know, I can't get through this loss. I'm going to have to take each day as it comes. And during that time, because of what happened, I really lost my faith because I feel like, okay, God, I stood on the word. I'm a tither. I give. I serve. I'm in leadership positions at church. I do everything that, you know, they say do. I pray. We stood on the word. We pray a million times a day. I praised. I ushered in your presence. I did all that. I stayed before you. I stayed at your feet. And still, I feel like I've lost again. Like, why? And I was really upset. And there'll be times I will wake up and knowing, like I said earlier, you know, I have a good relationship with God, a close relationship with him. And I just will wake up and not really pray like I used to. Now to say, okay, God, you already know what it is. You know everything already. You know, you know what my family needs. I don't even, you know, feel like praying. And it was just, that was just that. I kind of treated him like he was like a friend. But I'm kind of mad at you right now. But that's just really how it was. I was really upset. And I just couldn't understand how I did everything that they teach you to do when it comes to your faith. But I still feel like I lost. And I just really became, I guess within my spirit, I felt like I just really became rebellious. And I just really didn't know how to get out of this funk or this cloud of just feeling angry. I was really angry and I was really upset. And everyone around me was becoming pregnant and having babies. And I was happy for them because a lot of them, I stood on the word with them and I prayed with them and I laid hands on them. But I couldn't attend baby showers only because I just didn't want to, you know, be a negative Nancy or a bitter Betty or whatever at their showers. This is their special day. But I also didn't want to put myself through that as well, knowing that this time I'm a little bit more, I'm a little weaker in my spirit. I'm a little weaker in my emotions than I have been before. And I just don't want to, you know, put myself through that. And so a couple months goes on. During this time, I'm really struggling with my health because of the methotrexate. It broke down my immune system really bad. So I was sick a lot. I couldn't work. I could barely take care of my daughter at that time. My mother had to come over and really help me because if you had ectopic pregnancy, it's really painful. My mom, thank God for her. She was able to help us with my daughter, who was 2 at the time, taking her to school, picking her up and caring for her. And again, my immune system was weak, and so I was sick a lot, so I couldn't work. It's a month before my daughter's 3rd birthday, and I'm just really upset that, you know, I can't work, and I wanted to give her this party. And again, no peer support, no one to talk to about what I'm going through, what I'm feeling, what I'm experiencing. So I'm just really at a loss, I'm really just at a crossroads. I don't really even know where to go. So from there, I started experiencing extreme anxiety, PTSD. I suffered from PTSD, nightmares and hallucination. Like, it was hell in my house because at night I would have, for a whole year, honestly, I had a dream, and it was the same exact dream every night for a whole year. And it was that people were breaking into my home trying to separate me from my family.
I will wake up in the middle of the night just really panicking, really scared, thinking that every sound that I hear in our home, we have like real hardwood floors. So every sound I heard, I thought it was actually my dream, you know, manifesting or something. So I was so scared. I would wake my husband up and alert him and have him go check out the house every night and have him go check on my daughter because I couldn't even get up and take care of her if she would holler or cry over the monitors at night. I couldn't get up and take care of her because her screaming and crying was, it sent the fight or flight feeling to me. So it was just like I froze in those moments because I didn't know what to do. And it's like I knew what to do, but mentally I was checked out. I couldn't help her at all. So my husband, thank God for him. My husband had to really endure a lot during that time with me. But that's how it was in our house for over a year, having that same nightmare and just really thinking that people are out to get me. It was just really weird. I've never been there before. Also at this time, God is like allowing other women who are pregnant to come to me and ask me for prayer. Why is it that you feel like I can minister to them and encourage them when right now I'm upset and I'm mad? I'm not a baby Christian. I know the word, but it's just like, I don't feel like digging it up to help somebody else. But they would call and I would pray for them. And I would get off the phone and I would cry and cry because I just couldn't understand how is it that I could pray for somebody else. And then the Holy Spirit had told me, I think it was like in February, that my brother and my sister was pregnant. And so I was like, okay, Holy Spirit, well, why are you revealing this to me? And sure enough, like 2 weeks later for Valentine's, they gave the family a box. And the box was their pregnancy announcement. And I opened it up on Valentine's Day. We're getting ready to go to dinner. I opened up the box. And it was the same exact announcement that we would have made 2 months prior to that. And I hurry up and close the box. Thank God my daughter had just walked in the room. Otherwise, my husband was going to have to mop me up because I just was devastated. And I wasn't upset that they were pregnant. I was happy for them and excited for them. But at the same time, it's just like, it's another dagger to me where I feel like I probably was taking a few steps forward with my healing. But then when I get these announcements or see somebody else pregnant and now people who are close, I just really didn't know how to take it. And so from there, I actually had dealt with suicide ideation. I just didn't understand life anymore. I felt like, okay, I'm so deep into this loss and this grief, this pain, this devastation. I still don't have anybody to talk to about this. No one who will understand me. I don't know what to do. I just decided like, okay, well, you know, if I need some aspirin sometime to help me fall asleep at night, instead of taking the recommended dose, I'll probably take 3 or 4 more and whatever happened, happened. And it's not that I wanted to die. And I thank God for keeping me. God will keep you when you don't want to be kept. Listen, I thank God for that because I'm alive and I'm doing so much better now. And I can talk a little bit about that later on, but I just didn't want, I wanted the pain to end. Didn't want to die. I just wanted the pain to end. And I just did not know how to get it to end, how to get it to stop. And so a couple months just continues to go on. And now we're like 2018. I want to say in May, we're in May 2018. My husband and I, we find out we were pregnant again. Actually, I'm sorry, not May. In March, we found out we were pregnant. And this time I'm kind of just like, okay, I'm not going to get attached or I don't know what to say. I don't know what to do. I'm just going to follow the doctor's orders and just do whatever they have me to do. I think maybe 6 weeks later is when we found out that it could possibly be another loss because my ACG levels were decreasing instead of actually going up the way they were supposed to. So that seemed like an alarm to the doctors. And so I remember one of my friends, my close friends, her mother was killed. And so we went to the funeral to support them. And I ended up tucking what I was going through again because I'm there trying to show up for somebody else. And it was actually at the funeral, I went to the restroom, and that's when I'm unprepared and I ended up having the bleeding, the heavy flow and everything during that time. So here it is, another situation where I'm tucking what I'm going through and what I'm experiencing. It's the fourth time now. So I'm kind of just like numb to the situation, but I'm kind of slowly coming back around to my faith, where my faith is concerned, and to really like start seeking God and trusting Him a little bit more and paying a little bit more attention in church. Cause sometimes I will go to church and it's like, I hear what you're saying, but it's like, I don't know if I believe anything that you're saying right now, only because of the pain and everything that I had went through. Just really painful, very devastating to me. At that time, that was like May, we became pregnant like 2 months later. We got pregnant with our sixth child at that time. And this time I really kind of feel like, okay, I'm going to change my mindset about this loss. And I'm sorry, not this loss, this pregnancy. And I'm really just going to trust God and just build my faith back up for it. And however, right now, I feel like I'm a pro now. And I felt like I already know what the doctor's going to want. I have a standing appointment. So I'm not going to go get my ACG levels checked until the end of August. I'm going to wait. Because by then, I will be 2 weeks past the safe zone. And then that's when I'll call my doctor and let him know what's going on. However, August 15th, which is the same date that my grandmother passed, 2 years to the date, I began to have the bleeding. And I just felt something in my spirit. And I'm just like, oh my God, like, this is crazy. This cannot be happening again. Like, what's going on? So at this time, instead of really focusing on the why me, God, or what's going on spiritually, or just, you know, the blame game or anything, I really just started to take care of myself and just say, okay, I need to take it easy. I'm not going to tuck this. If this is, you know, what's going on, I need to just face this thing head on and really take care of myself and think about myself first. And so I called the doctor and let them know what was going on. But then they told me to come in 2 weeks later. After suspecting that I had already lost the baby, they asked me to come in because my ACG levels were concerning. We went in, had an ultrasound done. I didn't understand why she wanted to do the ultrasound. The technician, my doctor, was actually at the hospital at the time, so I didn't see him. But she did an ultrasound on my stomach and couldn't find anything. And she asked if she can do a vaginal ultrasound. And so she did that and she turned the monitors on and we heard the strongest, most beautiful heartbeat I have ever heard. And I just lit up because the baby Judah that we lost in 2017, the day that we found out it was an ectopic pregnancy, was the same appointment that we were going to hear the baby's heartbeat. So to me, that was just like music to my ears. Like, I just lit up and I was so happy. And I was like, okay, oh my gosh, I don't know who you are, but you are a warrior. You are strong. Like, you're still there. Yes, praise the Lord. But then she's like, no, started asking me, am I in pain? And I said, no, I wasn't experiencing any pain. I actually wasn't experiencing any bleeding or anything. But the way the baby was growing in my tube, they actually said that it was starting to erupt. And so I should be in excruciating pain. And I wasn't. I was not in any pain at all. And so she called the doctor. Doctor got on the phone with me. And he said, okay, Anisha, I need you to be here in surgery. Like, you have less than an hour to be in surgery to save your life because your tube is erupting. And this is not good. So I need you here like right now. Don't go anywhere else. I need you to rush over to the hospital here. And so I said, okay. It was crazy because it's like the peace of God just really came over me. And a couple days earlier than that, I heard this song for the first time and it's called Reckless Love. And I never heard it before, but this guy, Tim Bowman Jr., I love him.
He's a gospel artist, and I heard him singing the song. And so I fell in love with it, and I had that song in my heart. And so it was like God gave me a song for that moment, for that season, for that experience. And I went to the hospital, and it was so crazy because my husband and a doctor, they're sitting on the side of the bed, and they're talking about the procedure, what they're going to do. Another lady is asking me questions, putting me into the system, doing the administration work. Another lady is prepping me for surgery. Someone else is administering some pain meds. And then someone else is asking me to sign papers for a burial or to contact the funeral home. And so I'm in a room with like 8 people just trying to prepare me for what's to come. And I'm just laying there in the song, the lyrics to the song. Reckless Love is just invading my spirit, and it's getting louder and louder and louder. And I'm just like, okay, God, like, I trust you in this moment. I don't understand, but I trust you in this moment. And I believe that this is you showing up in my life, the reckless love of God. You have chased me down. You are fighting for me. And I just want to thank you for that. And I just didn't understand how I could have that much strength in that time, but I did. And so they wheeled me down, prepared me for surgery and everything. And I just began to speak to the baby and just say, you know, I'm your mom. This is how old I am. Your father, this is his name. We met in high school. This is how long we've been married. You have a sister. Her name is Nye. And just began to tell the baby who I am, that I love them. And thank you for coming to visit me. Thank you for being with me here on earth for this time. And I began to ask God to please take the baby's spirit before they actually went in, because I knew the baby was still alive. I heard the baby's heartbeat. So God, take this baby's spirit and give them to my grandmother in heaven to raise with my other 4 babies. And I just asked him to do that for me. And then they went and got my husband, because I just started crying like crazy because I just couldn't believe, you know, what was going on. And so he prayed over me and calmed me down. Then the next thing I know, I woke up and the surgery was over. But when I woke up, I was tired. And it was a different kind of tired, not just the physical tired, but I was tired in my spirit. I was just tired. It was like I had a white flag and I just said, God, I'm tired. God, I don't know what to do. I'm done. I don't have any more fight. I don't know what else to do. And then here comes this lady who was like, well, here's your discharge papers. Are you ready to go home? And I don't know what happened particularly, but I know I was just like, hey, listen, give me a moment. Like, let me get myself together. I don't know if you read the charts to see what happened and what all I've been through, but just give me a moment. And I had to really gather myself together. And fast forward maybe 2 weeks later, my nephew that the Lord had told me about earlier that year actually was born. He was actually due the same day, August 22nd, which is National Rainbow Baby Day. That's the day I lost my baby, Hope, that same day. But I was like, Lord, please don't let them have that baby today. You know, I just really need to not have this in our family right now. But my nephew was born like 2 weeks later. And somehow, some way, I got the strength to get up and get on my walker. I had a walker and a waist trainer and ice pack and everything. And I still went over there to visit my brother and his wife and the baby. And I just don't know where that strength had came from, but I know it was the spirit of God. And I just really, really enjoyed that moment. But that just speaks to how at that time I just really gave myself to God and just really said, okay, you know what? I'm going to do this a little different. I'm not going to be rebellious like I was last time with the cussing and self-medicating. Also at the time when I was having the suicide ideation experiences, I was drinking heavily as far as just wine. I just wanted something to numb the pain, like bottles of wine, like on rotation. That was just that. That's all I could use to kind of help me in that situation. But this time I said, God, I'm going to throw myself at your feet and I'm going to seek you. And I surrender all. I just give you everything. I don't understand. I don't know what's going on, but I trust you and I need a word from you. And sure enough, while I was on recovery, recovering from bed rest, I got a hold to a woman's conference, and it was Sarah Jakes. It was her conference, her first Woman Evolve conference. And she began to just say that everything that you're going through and that you're experiencing is because of generational curses, and God has a purpose and a plan for you, and you're going to break down these generational curses. And because your mother couldn't do it, you don't want your daughter to fight it, but your grandmother struggled with it. And when she said that, I know that was the Spirit of God speaking to me, because that is exactly my story. My mother never experienced pregnancy loss. I don't want my daughter to have to fight this thing, but my grandmother did struggle with it. And unfortunately, she wasn't there to help me through it. But a lot of it started to make sense to me, and just saying, you know, you were pregnant with purpose. You're pregnant with one woman's curse, but another woman's breakthrough, and God is going to use you to break it off. Generational curses off your community and off women who are coming after you and generations after you. And I just thought it was so God that the whole, the objects that she was using was just talking about pregnancy, but it was more so about being pregnant in the spirit. And so I just knew that God was speaking to me and was telling me that everything that I had experienced was not necessarily for me to have a dead end or anything like that, or to be done with, but I have purpose, and that there's something that he's going to do in me and through me because of what I went through, to birth it off of other women in my community and my family and generations to come. And I just said, okay, God, like Mary, if however it is, you know, be done to me according to your word. And maybe a couple months later, I went back to work, and I'm trying to, you know, get back in the flow of things physically. I'm doing better physically. I'm doing better mentally. However, I began to start to see where I'm spiraling a little bit, because I think maybe I moved a little too fast. I went to a fertility treatment specialist, and that was my second time going, but that time my husband didn't come with me. And that was kind of a hard appointment, because the doctor was very brass with me, and here I am in this appointment talking about IVF treatments and to see if this was an option, and I wasn't covered. You know, my husband wasn't there with me to protect me, and I was fighting back tears, and I think everything just all of a sudden started to catch up with me. And I'm looking at these scars from this laparoscopic surgery and thinking to myself, like, okay, how am I beautiful to my husband? Am I beautiful to my husband? Does he still love me? Does he still want me? Like, I got all these scars on my body. How could he care? You know, I didn't want him to see me. I didn't want him to see my body. I didn't want to be connected to him or anything. It was just really weird. And I just also said, hey, I understand that if you want a divorce, I understand, because I feel like I felt you as a woman 5 times. I felt you as a wife. I felt myself as a woman. I just was really, really down on myself and really didn't understand, you know, how to move forward. Even though I know I got a word from God, I still had, you know, these emotions and things that I was dealing with. And so I didn't also know at that time that as I'm trying to talk to my husband about these things, he's kind of silent. He's not really saying much. I didn't realize that he now was actually suffering and grieving a lot as well. And so here we are together, 5 losses, no one to talk to, no peer support, no one to really reach out to really help us. So we don't know what to do. We're roommates at this point. We're co-parenting. We're living in the same house together at this point, but that's just that. And so I keep reaching out to him to love me according to my love language, but he's like not listening, or he's not really paying attention. He's just trying to get through the day and make sure that, you know, the basic needs of the house and everything is met as a father or a husband would. And so I'm working, and all of a sudden, you know, I'm working with someone, and this gentleman, he just begins to like show me some attention, or is listening to me and thinking that some of the things that I'm saying or what I'm saying or what I'm doing is catching his attention. And it's a little weird, because it's like, okay, I've never had like, you know, conversations with someone before. And now that this person is like actually taking to me or complimenting me, and the compliments kind of started making me blush a little bit. And I was like, okay, wait a minute, you know, you need to check yourself, because this is so left field. Like,
no, this is wrong. And so, you know, I began to say, hey, thank you for the compliments, whatever, but no, thank you. You know, I'm married and, you know, we're not going to go there. And so for whatever reason, I came home and told my husband, like, hey, you know, this is what's going on. And he's just like, oh, okay. But he's not saying anything because, of course, he's like, you should know how to shut this down. You should be good. Don't worry about it. But it continues on and it continues. And I feel uncomfortable and I keep, you know, coming back to my husband, telling him about it. And it was crazy because before it all started happening, I began to tell him, I went to him one day and I laid on him and I said, I need to recover me because I feel like I'm about to spiral out of control. I said, I don't know what it is, but I feel like, I felt like a spiritual attack was coming on, but I didn't know how to say that because I'm vulnerable. I'm still trying to get over my fifth loss. It's only been about a month or so. And it's just a lot that's going on. So I really didn't know how to convey how I was feeling and what I was experiencing to him in a more direct way. And so, again, here's everything that's going on at work with this gentleman. And it just becomes like out of hand. And I'm like, okay, well, you know what? If he's not going to, he's not listening to me, maybe he don't want me no more. Maybe, you know, he really don't care. I felt like I didn't have anything else to lose. So I was like, okay, well, you know what? This is exciting to me. This is different. I've never flirted back with anybody else before. I've never experienced this. So, okay, well, I got one foot in. So I might as well, you know, flirt back, whatever. And it was just like, you know, yeah, flirting is flirting, but it wasn't like I really wanted to do anything with him. I didn't really want to go there. I knew what was going on emotionally and that it was wrong and everything. But it's like I would come home and I'm just home to an empty house, even though there's people here. It's like the only person who's bringing me any type of excitement or joy or peace or anything or connection is my daughter. But at that time, I'm still feeling like a horrible mom because I could barely take care of her in the past from all the losses and also this time. And so the flirting just continues to go on. And then I reached out to like one of my male cousins who was telling him what was going on. And he was like, okay, you need to talk to your husband about it and let him know what's going on. And so I did that and said, hey, we need to connect. I know it's been a couple months. But because of course, you know, after you lose a baby, you're not really concerned about being intimate or having sex or anything like that. So it was just like, okay, we need to like get together, like let's plan something and let's connect because I'm missing something from you. And there's a lot of temptations and stuff going on around me. And so I ended up telling my husband what was going on and he finds out a little bit more about the situation. And thank God for the Holy Spirit because Holy Spirit just gave him some wisdom on what it is that I needed to do, what I needed and what he needed to do to help me and what I was actually crying out for more so than just that attention. So we, at that time, began to just really seek God about repairing our marriage, and nothing happened ever between me and the gentleman or whatever. And I thank God for that. But it got to a point where it could have happened. And that really was a big blow in our marriage because nothing like that had ever happened. And so we were invited to like a friend's church to visit. And the Sunday that we went was like 2 weeks later after that had came out. Like I told my husband what was going on. And the pastor's sermon series was titled Unhappily Ever After. And so we were like, okay, God, like, yeah, you set this whole thing up. Like, we're here and you have a word for us. We believe it. And it was so good. It was exactly what we were both trying to say to each other, but just didn't know how to say it and what we were experiencing. And it was just so good that we just kept going back. We kept going back every week to finish out the sermon series. But everything about it was just so good. And we actually just decided to stay instead of, you know, continuing on where we were at our current church. And so we really felt like God was moving us to a different place, kind of like Abraham, when he began to speak to him afresh about his purpose and about what he had for him. He had to get him away from everybody that he was familiar with and where he was comfortable at, so he can speak to him and tell him who he called him to be and who he says he is and what he's going to do through him and for his generation. And so I feel like I had an Abraham moment because it was at that moment when we separated from what was familiar and got fresh eyes and fresh ears to hear God. A couple months later, that's when I began to hear from God about a self-care routine for me, how to nurse myself back to health, because I just know it was so much going on. Okay, I don't have any peer support. There's no resources in my community, so no one's going to help me. I don't have anybody really to talk to. No one in my family has experienced pregnancy loss, so I'm going to have to trust God and seek him and listen to him about how to get myself back together again, mentally, emotionally, physically. And so a lot of things that I started to do then was journaling. And journaling really helped me just dump my feelings and my thoughts out. I also began to get into aromatherapy a lot and using the diffusers. I also bought myself flowers because I just was like, you know, I wanted something beautiful and something different and just wanted to treat myself. I didn't want to have to wait for my husband to buy me flowers. I can go to the Kroger and get like the $5 minettes. And so I did that every week. I bought myself flowers. I did something for myself. And because of the methotrexate that broke down my immune system, a lot of products I couldn't use any longer. Everything that I use had to be natural, all natural products. And so I began to do a lot of research and I got a lot of the products that were locally sourced here in town by someone that I knew. So I started using those products and I would light candles and just really changed the atmosphere of my home with the aromatherapy and with the lighting and things like that. I would also treat myself like once a month to one of my favorite boutiques in town and just bought myself something. Even if it was $10 that I spent, I just made myself do something for me. And I did a lot of coloring and crossword puzzles when I felt overwhelmed, when I felt anxious or right before bed. So I won't think about, you know, having another nightmare. I would get the crossword or word search books and really just feed my brain, but also to kind of just focus in on something to lessen the anxiety that I will feel right before going to sleep. And that really helped. It helped a whole lot. And so as I'm putting together this routine for myself, God begins to speak to me more about having compassion for other women and families in our community. Because if I'm going through this and I don't have any resources, then how many other women in my community are also experiencing pregnancy loss and maybe not too bad to the extent that I was, but at least on some level, what about those women? Who's looking out for them? Who's supporting them? Do they know what to do? Do they have anybody to talk to? How are they nursing themselves back to health? Where are they at in their faith and their friendships? Because when I was going through my losses, I did have some friends who actually didn't know how to show up for me. And I walked away from some friendships because I saw who was really for me and who wasn't. And two of my closest friends, they lived out of state at the time, but they would show up, they would fly home and just get me out the house and come see me. They would call, they would text, but they called more than texting. They were very personable. And a lot of the conversations was not necessarily about me. It was just, hey, let's just talk. I want to hear from you. I just want to know what's going on. And I really appreciated that because they weren't married. They didn't have any children at the time, but they showed up for me versus the friends that I had here in town that I would see. They didn't really show up, you know, for me or put in the effort. So I really appreciated that. So I began to just think about all of that. And I came across a post on Instagram for a fertility walk of hope, infertility walk of hope. And so I just began to ask God, like, why doesn't something like that exist here in my community? If it was here, then I would go, but it's in Florida, you know, I'm not going to be able to attend that. But I just kept going back to that post. I was drawn to it. And the last time I had went to it, I proposed a question again to God and ask why something like this didn't exist. There's walks for all kinds of other diseases. Why not?
one for infertility here in my, you know, community. And he said, well, it has yet to exist because you have yet to create it. And I said, oh, okay. Okay. What does that mean? And then that's when he just really started downloading Keys of Hope into my heart and the mission to promote the awareness of pregnancy loss and infertility and to begin to put together a support group. And I wrote that in my journal like maybe 2 years ago that I had wanted to start a support group, but I didn't know how to go about doing it. And so here it is again. It has come up, and God is just downloading the whole support group session in my heart and how to get things started as a 501c3 nonprofit organization and who to connect with. And he literally sent me like all my board members. He sent them to me. And April 2019 is when we launched. We actually launched April 24th.
April, I think the week of the 17th is like National Infertility Awareness Week. And so God began to speak to me about launching it that week. And I just really didn't understand. I think it was something else going on in my spirit at the time. I was just trying to understand how significant that week was, that it was something more to it than just launching it National Infertility Awareness Week. And then I was going through some paperwork and I looked and saw that April 24th was my due date with our baby Hope that we had lost. And so I said, okay, I'm going to launch it April 24th, 2019. And I'm going to share my story. I'm going to be brave and launch this video and launch this website and just everything that I'm doing on the same day that I would have given birth to my baby. Instead, I didn't give birth to a baby. I gave birth to purpose. And it has just been mind-blowing, the things that God has done through every cohort, every session, every person that's come through our support group, the outpouring of love from the community, and just so many women that have reached out to my husband and I and the couples who reached out to us for support since we launched that. And so that word that I got back in 2018 about breaking the generational curses and standing up for other women and being there for them, being pregnant with another woman's breakthrough and purpose, really came into manifestation right after that. So now I'm just doing Keys of Hope and focusing on that. And then also now adding birth and bereavement doula services to Keys of Hope, because a lot of the women who come through our sessions will go on to have subsequent pregnancies, and how much more would they need support after losing a baby? I know exactly how they feel, the anxiety, the stress levels that could be there. And so being able to be a birth support doula for them will really be beneficial for them, especially after they've come through our support group and got the Keys of Hope to get themselves back to a place where they can believe God and trust God to have more children. Then me also offering that service for them will just be another level of benefit for them and just another hope step for them in their life as well. So that's a little bit of, or all of my story pretty much.
Man, Anisha, oh my goodness. You took us on a journey and a ride, and you're sharing your story. And I'm so grateful that we connected through Instagram, and you were a part of the first cohort for the Sisters in Loss Birth and Bereavement Program. And I'm so thankful that you were able to take that and now be able to offer those services to your community and be certified. Yes, Lord. Get you certified. Yes. I would love for you to share about just this transition that you've done. I mean, really, you have gone from, you know, several losses, going through infertility, and now being able to turn your pain into purpose. What does that feel like? And really, how does that work? For a lot of our listeners, as you know, we go through this and we really don't know what to do with this, right? So can you share with the listeners just how you have really turned your pain into purpose now in becoming a doula?
Yes. Well, actually before I even began to experience the recurrent pregnancy losses, after I had my daughter, a lot of women, Black women, in particular, they will reach out to me and ask me for support during pregnancy. We were pregnant at the same time. They would ask me for support during the pregnancy. So whatever I learned through my birthing education and just the fact that I do a lot of research, and I did when I was pregnant and even through the losses. So anything that I learned, any articles, any videos or webinars, anything I came across, I share with them, and I would call them and we would have discussions about it, and I would admonish them to write certain things down and how to advocate for themselves and speak up for themselves when they go into have their babies. And then even after having my daughter, I breastfed her. And that was just like the most amazing experience for me. And I loved it so much. And so I'm such an advocate for breastfeeding and Black moms breastfeeding. And a couple young ladies again reached out and was just like, you know, I'm breastfeeding my baby, but I feel like I want to give up. But I was like, no, don't give up. This is what we're going to do. So I would put together a little plan for them and have like weekly check-ins or daily texts. And so I pretty much provided them with that birth support and some postpartum support and some tips on lactation support. Not certified, but I still, you know, provided them with that support. And so when I saw that you were offering the training, I just really began, well, actually God sent me down, because I saw the email so many times, but I thought about the fact that I didn't live in the same state. And I thought it was more of an in-person thing, especially during the stay-at-home orders, COVID-19 going on. And I just didn't understand how that would work in my schedule and if I could do that or not. And then Holy Spirit sat me down, I think like 2 days before the due date, and really had me look at the email, and I began to read it. And he just really started aligning a little bit more. Earlier this year, he began to speak to me about Black maternal health and wellness. And as I share with you, you know, some of the inequalities that I've experienced being in the hospital and with medical professionals, how important it is for someone to speak up and to advocate for Black maternal health. And so I participated very heavily in Black maternal health week in April. And then again, I'm just doing a little bit more research and more research. And then when I read the email about your training, and Holy Spirit sat me down, was like, okay, you need to like pay attention to this. And I shared it with my husband when we talked about it, but I really feel like it was God pulling me to do it, and that it was all coming together of how he wants me to introduce this into the community and begin to speak to the young women in our community and the Black women to come together and create a wellness team and to actually start doing it under Keys of Hope. And so he actually just reminded me, I had totally forgot about it, how I did offer all of that support to those young women over the past 5 years. I just took it as me just being nice and doing something for them because they reached out to me to do it and I had the resources and the heart to do it. But he just began to show me how it was a full circle moment that he's restoring me back to that same position. But this time to do it with the certification and also to add to our mission the importance of Black maternal health and maternal health overall. And just being able to offer these doula services to these women, because I honestly do not know of any Black women doulas in my city where I'm from. If there are some, I don't know anything about them, but I'm very involved in my community.
with several organizations, my sorority, Sigma Gamma Rho, with Junior League and a couple other things, heavily involved in my church. So I know a lot of women in leadership and many connections, and I've never come across any woman, or especially a Black woman, who's a doula. And so I know that this is so needed. I look at the websites a lot for funeral homes, and there's a lot, at least like 3 babies that pass away every month, Black babies, Black infants who are dying. And so we're trying to connect with these mothers, and a lot of them are young mothers. And so I just really have a heart to want to, you know, connect with them and to educate them on self-advocacy, maternal wellness, the options that they have, and just wanting to be there to stand up and speak for them and just to educate them and support them. And so when they do become pregnant, I want to support them through their births and make sure that I can add to helping bridge the gap or bring about a solution for, so we won't have a lot of these maternity mortality rates. You know, Black women, what, they die at 3 to 4 times more than an educated Black woman dies at 3 to 4 times more than an uneducated white person. But we know that it's all down to, you know, the systemic racism and everything. And so I know what I went through in the hospitals just with the pregnancy loss. So what about those women who are uneducated and the women who come from a different socioeconomic background than I do? Even though I have a degree and my husband and I have very good thriving careers and businesses, and we're continuing on our education, not everyone is in that same boat. But even those who are, those are the women who are dying at that rate, the 3 to 4 times more. So I just really want to use these services to be able to just give back to my community in whichever way that I can. And I know that adding this already to the bereavement part of what we do with Keys of Hope, with the women who come through who's experienced their pregnancy loss, just being able to be there for them and help them when they go on and have their babies, I know that it will just be even more beneficial.
So were there any tools or resources, books, things that you use to help you throughout your recurrent losses that you can share with the listeners?
I don't remember exactly like one book or anything in particular. Like I said, a lot of things that I did was more so just creating a self-care routine, more practical things that helped me a little bit better. So the aromatherapy, the flowers, journaling, just writing down my experiences. I just needed to talk to someone. I actually ended up, I did talk to a counselor once, and she was a Black lady. And when I told her, you know, what church I went to, she just jumped real churchy on me. And so I'm sitting there in the counseling session, and I'm just looking like, sis, like, I'm not here for church because I could have went to my pastor. I need some practical advice. I need to know how to live again, because right now I'm not living. I'm scared. I'm hallucinating. I'm losing my mind at night. I'm having nightmares. I just need something to help me. And it just never really struck me to actually get any books or anything like that to read upon. So I think a lot of the things I did were just like practical things to help me calm down, because the level of anxiety and the things that I was suffering from was more mental. And I just didn't have the mental capacity to really sit down and read something and try to comprehend. But I could actually get myself together to say, OK, I'm going to turn on my diffuser and blow the room up with a whole lot of lavender before bed tonight and take a bath and put some essential oils in and use my natural products and get into bed and dump my ideas and my thoughts, my feelings, just get it out and cry it out. That actually helped me a little bit better, more of the practical things. And it was only after maybe around last year is when I did start looking up articles and finding Instagram organizations on Instagram, such as yourselves and Sisters in Loss, to actually begin to follow
And that really helped me. So a lot of your podcast and that helped me a little bit more. I really enjoy like listening to the podcast more than just actually reading the tools. Other than that, the only other books that I had was just coloring books and crossword books. So everything I did was more so self-care, and I had to nurture my mind, get my mind back to a good place. Because sometimes I couldn't even make a decision about what my family was going to eat for dinner. It was just too overwhelming. So my husband had to really like take over where that aspect was concerned. So I knew that that's what I needed to do. But I know there are a lot of different books and organizations such as yourself and a couple other articles and things that are out there. I think they're on my website that I have them on there. I can't think of any particular other than that. And just food. I did change that. I did pick up, because of the secondary infertility diagnosis, Tia Mori Hardrick, I believe that's how you say her last name. Tia Mori Hardrick. She has a cookbook because she actually struggles with endometriosis. And so I did read a little bit more about her story, and I followed her and her cookbook and her recipes to help with the nutrition side of the infertility as well. And so those are just some of the things that I did.
Awesome. Awesome. So what encouraging words can you leave with our listeners? As you know, we are in the middle of a pandemic as we record this podcast, and we are living in a time of uncertainty where, you know, a lot of people's fertility treatments have been canceled. A lot of women are pregnant after losses, and they may be feeling some anxiety or some fear on top of the possibility of giving birth during a pandemic. So what encouraging words can you leave with our listeners during this time of uncertainty?
I would just like to say that I know that these times are uncertain and they can be a little scary, especially with everything that's going on top of, you know, even with the protest with honoring George Floyd and Ahmaud Arbery. It's a lot going on. I understand that right now. But just try to do what you can to keep yourself grounded. If that means not getting on social media and availing your spirit and yourself to a whole lot of different voices at this time, just try to hone in on what you need and what's important. I will say that Sisters-in-Laws and your podcast is very encouraging for those who may have experienced a pregnancy loss, is to come on and to listen to other women and their stories and find out how they survived and what they did to help themselves get through their pregnancy losses, to gain some type of support. Because right now, you know, we are social distancing, and I know that's hard for a lot of people because we can't connect with people, but at least getting on a podcast, or if you are on social media, is finding those quality, encouraging organizations and sources that you can listen to. But you have to kind of just know what you can and what you cannot take. Journaling always helps me. I journal to this day. So just dumping out your feelings, writing those things down, especially during this time, go back and just write down your journal, writing your journal about your journey from the beginning, what it was like being pregnant during COVID, what it was like delivering during this time. So you can actually go back to it some other time and just see how God did it, walk you through that season. I'll also say that during this time, to learn how to advocate for yourselves, how to speak up for yourselves, even with the process, this is going on now, this is letting us know it's time for our voices to be heard, especially as Black women, when we go into these medical professionals and different medical appointments that we have. Please, you have to know what you're talking about. Do some research. Don't just take what they're saying as face value. Demand your respect. Demand to be heard. And just learn how to speak up for yourself during this time. But
other than that, just really relying on family and friends that you can rely on. It's okay to envision your birth, how, you know, birth should be, how you want it to be. It's your right to, it's your human right. And it's, you know, your for justice for you to give birth the way that you want to. So it's okay to envision and plan that out and see how you want that to go. And to ask those questions, if you're going to be giving birth during this time, about what's expected, what you can expect of the support team. Can you bring in a doula? If you can't bring in a doula in person because of COVID-19, then make arrangements for your doula to be present via Zoom or video chat, and just try to prepare yourself for what that's going to be like giving birth and then also afterwards. But other than that, I just want you to know that you are strong and that you can do it, and that God has already seen that you will be where you are right now at this season, in this moment, for such a time as this, and that he does have plans for you and they are to prosper you. And I just want them to just continue to hold on to God and to prayer and just those close family and friends so that they can glean on for support.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Anisha. So where can we connect with you after this episode? Drop all your socials for us.
All right. So my personal Instagram is Anisha Stanley, and my organization, Keys of Hope, on Instagram is Keys of Hope Foundation. We have a website, and that's keysofhopefoundation.com. There you can find out a little bit more about our in-person peer support group, our virtual support group that will be coming up. And we actually focus on, you know, six different topics. We were talking about support and grief, understanding that model, friendships, family, faith, dreams and goals and visions, and self-care. So we have a lot of things coming up pretty soon that we will be able to offer virtually. We have to change the format to adapt to times and reaching out to people now. So you can find out a little bit more of that information there. And also on Facebook, it's just Keys of Hope.
Thank you so much, Anisha, for sharing your story with us. It has been a pleasure, and I am excited for you to be certified as a doula.
Hey, I'm excited too. I got a couple clients that I'm meeting with next week. So, hey, thank you.
Hey, yes, awesome.
Thank you for listening to today's episode. For show notes, go to sistersinloss.com. To stay connected with us and join the Sisters in Loss community and receive my weekly newsletter, please go to sistersinloss.com/newsletter. That is sistersinloss.com/newsletter. Please rate and review this episode, and I will talk to you next week.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today we discuss technical diagramming with systems architect Maya. Let's go. First question. You've spent 10 hours slogging over a sequence diagram that should have taken 5. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board. And if I'm being honest, Miro would probably cut that time down by half. You know, with its AI tools and ready-to-go templates.
Next, your diagrams become so bulky, it's more complex than the solar system. But all it takes is a few clicks and...
It's Miro. I've used those technical shape packs way too many times, and stuff is just digestible on its infinite online canvas.
Now, the final question. Everyone's brought in, but you have to make all these tasks all the way over in Jira. But wait, it's done. Is it...
Miro. Easy with its two-way Jira sync. Easy to plot dependencies. Everyone always knows what's up.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people creating technical diagrams without workflow glitches. Get your first 3 boards for free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.